February 11, 1929, the day that Vatican City became the world's smallest state. It was on that chilly winter day that fascist leader Benito Mussolini and Cardinal Pietro Gasparri signed the Lateran Treaties, providing for the mutual recognition of what was then the Kingdom of Italy and the Vatican City. Well, the Lateran agreements recognize the independence and sovereignty of the Holy See and the creation of the Vatican City State. A second pact under the Accords defined the civil and religious relations between the government and the Church in Italy. And a third convention provided the Holy See compensation for papal states seized in the mid-1800s by the newly united Kingdom of Italy. The term Holy See, meanwhile, refers to the supreme authority of the Church, the Pope. It's the central government of the Catholic Church, and it is the Holy See which sends and receives diplomatic representatives to and from other states. Today, the Holy See maintains full diplomatic relations with more than 170 nations. All this is thanks largely to the Lateran Pacts. But what exactly did those treaties mean in terms of the Pope's temporal powers? Well, to help answer that question and more, I'm joined today by Vatican historian and former archivist Monsignor Charles Burns. Hello, Monsignor Burns.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, take us back a moment to 1929. What exactly brought about this historic accord between Italy and the Vatican City State?
The pact that was signed in 1929 really was the culmination of a long, long history concerning the papacy, history concerning the Italian peninsula. Because for 1,000 years, the Pope had enjoyed temporal sovereignty over the whole of central Italy. This then became a cause of contention when the other Italian states, the Kingdom of Naples, Tuscany, all these other states, small states, decided to go for unification in order to create the Kingdom of Italy. Now, from 1860 onwards, they began to occupy part of the papal territory, and then in 1870, on the 20th of September, the troops actually occupied the city of Rome. Pius IX took refuge inside the Vatican and never went out from it from then onwards. Neither did his successors, Leo XIII, Pius X, Benedict XV, because they felt that their sovereign rights had been violated very, very severely by this usurpation of their state.
Was there any time in that period where the popes felt their lives were at risk?
I don't think they felt their lives were at risk, but they had to tread very carefully, but so also had the Italian government, because effectively in occupying Rome in 1870, they breached an international agreement with France. The agreement was that they would not occupy the papal territory if the French garrison had to withdraw to France during the Franco-Prussian War, when the French soldiers were called back. That was the moment that the House of Savoy chose to just march straight into Rome. So they had actually breached an international agreement in doing this. That made their position weak internationally.
So from the 1870s up to 1929, what happened during that period?
From 1870 till 1929, the whole thing was, how are we going to solve the Roman question? It was something that had to find a solution. Various proposals were put forward, but eventually Pius XI, he was determined that he would solve this question. The question, of course, was the question of territory. Originally, it was proposed that the Holy See would receive sovereign territory extending out as far as the Mediterranean. Then that was reduced. At one stage, it was going to be from the present Vatican City, right across the city of Rome, to Villa Pamphili, taking in the whole of Villa Pamphili and the area between that and St. Peter's, which isn't vast territory, but it's certainly much more than we have today. Now, in order that that could not be an obstacle in the negotiations, Pius XI gave up that idea of Villa Pamphili. And indeed, right up until the very night before the signing, there was a problem over a small strip of land that ran up the side of the Holy Office. The Pope gave up that too, in order to get the signatures on this essential step to stop the impasse between the Holy See and Italy. The Duce, Mussolini, he realised that the Pope couldn't be expected to do any more. The Pope had gone beyond all the limits that most people thought he would have to abide by. The Pope had shown he had no intention whatsoever to have territorial aggrandisement, but he did have to have that handkerchief of sovereign territory that wasn't just spiritual. It had to be internationally recognized territory and sovereignty over it.
So was it then, can we date it back to 1929, when the Holy See first established diplomatic relations then with another country, which I would assume would have been Italy?
No, the diplomatic relations of the Holy See with other countries isn't a concession granted by Italy. Diplomatic relations of the Holy See go right back, I mean permanent diplomatic relations, go right back to the end of the 15th century. And during the 16th century, we really get the build-up of a diplomatic core, basically Europe. In the 19th century, especially with the independence of the countries in Latin America, they all sought recognition, their national recognition from the Holy See by establishing diplomatic relations. The result is we begin then, from then onwards, to find an expansion in diplomatic relations long before 1929. Immediately after the First World War, with the creation of the new Europe, the remapping of Europe, countries like Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Czechoslovakia, the new Austria, Yugoslavia, and all these countries, they all established diplomatic relations with the Vatican. It's only later, I mean, 10 years later maybe, that we find Italy establishing diplomatic relations with the Vatican. Because the question had been solved. Italy had recognized the territorial sovereignty of the Pope. Vatican City was not a dépendance of the Kingdom of Italy. It was sovereign, autonomous territory.
I know we don't really have time to get into it, but the Lateran Pacts did cover a lot of other issues, like the Pope had to submit candidates for bishop and archbishop to the Italian government, for example.
Yes.
It also, Italy also agreed to adapt laws on marriage and divorce to those of the Catholic Church.
Yes, well now, you see, there were two things were signed on that 11th of February. One was the actual Lateran Pact, establishing acknowledging the sovereignty of the Vatican. The other was the Concordat, between the Holy See and the Italian government. Now, the Holy See acts when a national hierarchy is maybe not in a position to establish something between itself and a government. The Holy See, because of its sovereign status, then, on behalf of a national hierarchy, obtains from that government an international agreement on how the Church can function within the territory of that nation. It's a complicated question, but in some cases it has saved the life of the Church in the country involved. Here in Italy, the question was different. The question basically turned around things like the schools, that the Pope did not want the fascist government to have complete control over education. He also fought for the sacrament of marriage, etc. That was one of the most important things at that time in that concordat with Italy. That concordat has been revised because times have moved on, things have changed. There were lots of things which the Church in Italy recognized were now obsolete, and it was better to renegotiate the concordat. And that was done at the time of Craxi and Cardinal Casaroli.
Okay, well, I see we've run out of time, although we've condensed history into just a few moments. Thank you very much to Monsignor Charles Burns, a Vatican historian and former archivist here in the Vatican. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Taking a look back at history. Well, moving out of that studio, we return to this one, where we hear Philippa Hitchin speaking to the governor of Vatican City State, Cardinal Giovanni Laiolo. She put a thorny question to him.
Cardinal Giovanni Laiolo, we're here marking this 80th anniversary of the foundation of Vatican City State, and there are those today who question the need for this temporal power, this temporal authority. How can we justify today the existence of this sovereign state for the exercise of spiritual authority over the world's Catholics?
The whole purpose of the sovereign state of the Vatican City is to safeguard the Pope from political interference or pressure as he leads the Church and carries out his ministry of the Gospel, which is at the service not just of Catholics, but for all of humanity. The Vicar of Christ must be independent and free to act without being called to account by any earthly authority, but simply by God. The history of Europe, especially, demonstrates how often in past centuries, and even in the 20th century, governments or regimes have tried to limit the freedom of the Pope in carrying out his mission. Even today, there are many politicians who would prefer the Pope to remain silent on those moral issues that they don't agree with. Vatican City State, within his tiny territory, guarantees the Pope full independence from any external political influence.
It's true to say that today there is still an undoubted fascination with what is often seen as this very mysterious world behind the walls of Vatican City. Are you keen to maintain that image, or are these 80th anniversary celebrations and perhaps your new website ways of modernizing and changing this image somehow?
In my view, this is a myth without any basis on reality. If people are looking for information, all they need to do is look at the documentation which is freely available to everyone, such as the laws and regulations governing the Holy See and the Vatican City State. Above all else, these are the instruments that can help people understand what is behind the Vatican walls. And they also offer clarification about many statements and actions that are taken by the Holy See. Apart from that, Vatican Radio gives a vast amount of information about what is going on in the Vatican today. And I am delighted to be able to thank all those involved for this important service, which is available in some 39 languages. Then there is the Osservatore Romano, which is available in 6 different language weekly editions, as well as the daily Italian edition. You have the Holy See website, www.vatican.ba, and the Vatican City State, www.vaticanstate.va. And just recently, the new YouTube site has been launched. Beyond all that, if someone is looking for information that is not available through any of these means, then he or she can always contact the press office or the various offices of the Holy See. I think the celebrations of this 80th anniversary of Vatican City State are another opportunity to discover this mysterious world, which is in fact the very straightforward and transparent world of the Vatican.
Cardinal Giovanni Laiolo is the governor of Vatican City State.